In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Saying it. That's popped up. John Singleton gives it a look. He might be able to have room. He does. That's the final out. The Astros win it 6-1. That is now six consecutive wins on this road trip, and they are in first place by themselves, moving a half game ahead of Seattle. Lots of smiles all the way around. Plummer, this road trip has been amazing after a really tough loss to start the trip, six in a row.
Yeah, never come home. Don't ever, and I don't say that to be mean, Astros. I'm not saying we don't want you around town. I love all of you. Don't ever come home. You
never.
Do much, 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 much better on the road. Todd Callis on the call right there as we welcome you in on a Tuesday. Payne and Pendergast with you till 10 a.m. this morning. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Man, the Astros have me in a good mood today, man. Really,
I actually even felt good given the healthy win that they had last night and the healthy cushion they had at the time when Pedro Leon just got lost in space because of the color of the trough there.
Yeah.
That I just overshot a simple fly ball to right field by about 5 feet. That was, you know, that was something that happened in the Astrodome in the 1970s.
Yeah.
The city of Houston and the Astros organization realized, oh, we got to fix this. This isn't quite right because nobody can pick up the ball versus this. In the case of the Astrodome, it was clear, transparent glass.
Yeah,
but it was creating a glare. But at the Trop, they've got similar visual issues.
Okay, so Amy and I were out to dinner. We were at Taqueria Sarandas watching the game, so we didn't have sound. We only saw the play, and we saw them.
Okay.
We saw them. So you're going to provide clarity for me here. So we saw them on the broadcast. We saw the play. We saw Pedro Leon overrun the ball, and then it lands 2 inches inside. Like, of all the places to land, lands 2 inches inside the line, not 2 inches outside the foul line. And then they kept showing the roof, the ceiling on the broadcast.
Yeah.
So they were just showing that because he lost the ball, or did it hit something up there?
It was he lost the ball. I'd have to have Brandy explained it to me. I'll be, for complete transparency,
yeah,
I did not see it. I walked in. I was getting cocky. And Brandy explained to me it was some kind of issue with picking up the ball against the roof.
I didn't know if it hit something, but that was...
Our listeners will provide clarity on the text line.
Yeah, they will.
Or in the YouTube chat. I'm trying to be better about the YouTube chat, everybody.
Yeah, just someone provide clarity for us there. That was the only glitch on Fromber last night, man. He's been one of, if not the best pitchers in baseball over the last 2 months.
That ended up being a triple, and then he scored after that. The base runner on third scored on a fly ball after that. So it was, it's been awesome. It's been awesome. It's been great since they've been on the road. You had Bregman and Yordan co-players of the week.
That was nice. You know, it's hard to pick between one of the two, and they were amazing the entire week last week. So why not split the trophy down? Do you think they just give them one trophy and saw it in half and they each get half of a trophy for that? just split it right down the middle? Or you
think King Solomon's trial. Mm-hmm. I think that you'll find out who the true team player is by the one who. I think Jordan, given his communist upbringings, will probably be more along the lines of like, well, it's for the good of the whole. I'll just give it to Bregman.
Give it to Bregman. Yeah,
that's a great. That's a good. That's the one. That's the selling point of communism, everybody. Yeah. That's where they hook you.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're like, well, for the good of everybody, we have to starve off 25% of the population. So yep. I'm not endorsing communism here. No. I'm just telling you what the hook is.
Right, right.
You do it for the collective. It's for good.
Stay on your toes. If anybody's approaching you, stay with a pitch.
Yeah, you got to beware. Kids, before you start going reading these communist manifestos, look at the actual history of what happens.
Good call, Seth.
You can't fight human nature.
Good call. Kids are going back to school now. They're back. I know the kids where Amy's teaching, kids are going back into school today. That's good. Giving them a little education on the way in. Framber.
You will starve. At some point, you'll think it's cool to starve 25% of the population because the leaders tell you that's what's for the good of the whole.
Right. Stay on your toes, kids. Framber was great last night. Pitch count got a little high. He made it through 5 2/3, struck out 9 guys. So that was cool. Here was Joe Espada on Framber Valdez last night.
Our pitching, just incredible job. Starting pitching all the way through the bullpen today, Scott and Framber's curveball has been a game-changing for him the last couple of outings. We know once he needs a ground ball, he's got that sinker. He was efficient. He threw the ball really well.
Something changed with the curve, or he used it more efficiently, or it just gets sharper?
Yeah, just gotten better with time. We asking him to use it more, and he's been working hard trying to get it, trying to get the location of it, land it whenever he wants to, behind the count, ahead of the count. It's been a game-changing for him.
The amount of movement he gets on like 96 mile per hour pitches is just so absurd.
Yeah.
I have nightmares about that's my current nightmare. I used to have dreams about showing up to a football game and I forgot my pads or things like that. I wake up in a cold sweat thinking about how to hit a Framber Valdez slider.
He's good, man. He's good. It's funny, all these pitchers. That's like a theme with this pitching staff this year, especially the starters. All these pitchers have like their own pitch that they just started using a whole lot more, and poof, presto! Like Hunter Brown with his sinker, right? Like he starts using this sinker. Framber, we just heard he's using the curveball more. Kikuchi gets here, and they're like, "Hey, bro, how about you triple the use of your changeup?" And now all of a sudden, it's like, "Hey, man, he fits right in." This guy.
Well, it's one thing they've always said is that it's as much about just that initial 1 hour meeting they have with the pitchers where they dumb everything down. I don't say that as an insult to the pitchers, but it's one of the big battles in analytics.
You
got to find that right balance of okay, how much can a human being actually absorb and implement? He doesn't need equations running through his head.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as they take all that math from their squadron of nerds and boil it down into, hey, you should be throwing these pitches more.
Yep.
The one really cool thing about the broadcast last night was when they just showed Arrigetti sitting next to Kikuchi, and Kikuchi studying all the batters because he's pitching tonight even though he's seen these guys a bunch, he's been pitching in the division. They were talking about how impressed Kikuchi has been with the environment and how much there's just so many tools they give you to improve yourself. That made me feel that much better about, okay, this Astros organization hasn't lost its edge. And Arrigetti's consulting with Kikuchi on what he's looking at on his iPad. It's really cool, especially since, what was the stat you were talking about before we came on air? The pitchers since they went
since they started 12-24, the Astros, since they started 12-24, the Astros have given up the least amount of runs in baseball.
And that's with how many starters injured right this
that's
moment?
That's with a yeah, that's season. With Javier and Urquidy. Yeah, that's with like a half a dozen guys on the injured
Javier,
list. Yeah.
Urquidy, Framber, and on.
That includes
on.
The bullpen too. Like we're talking about the entire staff. So yeah, it's been good.
It also, and it also includes, I think we optimistically were hoping that by mid-August we'd have both Verlander and Luis Garcia back. So that's at various points during this season. So Kyle Tucker is still hobbling around. They've got some. It's almost like back in the day when you had the second trade deadline where you could pick up a Verlander. Now it's just the injury bug maybe has started to be eradicated, and you're going to get another Verlander boost. Hopefully,
Verlander's going to get another rehab start this week. Yeah, they should hold off. till August 31st to bring him back is an homage to the first time he came here back in 2017.
I'm not going to even tempt fate by asking like a hurricane to come through or anything. That would be an inappropriate
joke. Yeah, yes. Don't even joke about that.
Talk about my other recurring nightmare. I have. Oh, it's raining.
Yeah. here's one more from Joe Espada, and this was good. This is from Joe Espada on Framber Valdez and Yiner Diaz working together as a battery.
Yeah, it's been really good. The more they've worked together, the more in tune they are, the more they understand each other, they know how to navigate lineups, they know how to make adjustments. So it's been great to watch.
Okay, this is significant for a couple of reasons. One, sign that your young catcher is coming along as a game caller, as a mature leader, and for that pitching staff, because his bat needs to be in the lineup. You can't mess around. Yiner is either catching or DHing every day for this lineup. He's been really good, and he's added some pop of late. His batting average had been up there for a while. He hits a 3-run home run last night that ends up putting the game out of reach against the Rays. It's significant as well because we do recall earlier in the year, and I'm looking at Framber's game log to try to figure out. I couldn't remember which game it was. Just looking at the game log, I think it was this game against the Angels in late May, where Framber just decided to start shaking off Yiner Diaz. The game was going fine. And then Framber just starts to go into business for himself, and he ends up giving up 8 runs. Gives up 3 home runs in a row. Like, bang, bang, bang.
I was watching the YouTube highlights this morning with the benefit of hindsight. And, you know, on the YouTube highlights, they have both the home and away announcers at various points. And after that error in right field, the color commentator said, well, Framber is known for losing his whatever, getting frazzled or something like that. And with the benefit of hindsight, I was like, ha, you cocky idiot. You don't know. That's old Framber. That's not new Framber.
It was funny. He gave up a hit. I think it was the inning where they ended up pulling him in the sixth.
Yeah.
And he gave up a hit in that inning, and it looked like there may have been either some miscommunication or Framber was, trusting Yiner. Like, it was something where Framber could have easily in the past blamed Yiner Diaz. And they zoomed in on Framber's face after the hit. And Framber just had this look in his face, like, okay, who's up next? Like that kind of thing. And Blum and Callis pointed out on the broadcast, they pointed out, like, okay, they pointed out how Framber's kind of, he's getting better at just rolling with the punches.
That meltdown, the cool thing about that meltdown was that Framber had, owned it immediately afterwards. Yeah. He's the one, we knew that he had just gone rogue because he fessed up to it immediately afterwards, and I sometimes you need a scare like that to put you back on the tracks.
Yeah,
that's just every now and then he needs a scare like that to put himself back. He probably did double duty with his sports psychologist that week, and off you go.
Whatever works, man. Whatever works. But the Astros in first place. You know what, Ben? Real quick, we have not asked the people if they've heard the good news.
Oh,
the Astros are in first place by themselves because the Mariners didn't play last night, so they're a half game up on the Mariners now.
We don't have to do the complex math and percentages and decimal points and all that.
Nope, half game. That's all you need to know. So
I take a break every day. I hear you. I know percentages aren't necessarily complex math. Go die. All right. It's 6:11 in the morning.
Yeah, you've never had to get up at 6 a.m. And well, actually, the people listening now probably do get up at 6 a.m. to work. But go tell your friends who think that math is, not hard. It's hard, man.
It's hard. I've noticed I'm a lot dumber math-wise when I'm doing a talk radio show, because I think the verbal parts of your brain are just hyper oxygenated, and the math side of your brain kind of shrivels up and dies.
Yep.
I do some idiotic math on air that afterwards I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm actually pretty good at math. This is what the hell?
What's going on? All right. Texans back at practice today. They're late this morning, so they'll be practicing while the guys are on an in the loop today. So we're getting past the halfway point here. There are some position battles that they've got to get hashed out here over the next 2 weeks. Cutdowns are 2 weeks from today. The three most compelling position battles on this team right now, we're going to try to hash them out for you. That's coming up next.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you on a Tuesday. Texans back at practice today, 11:30. Heat index supposed to be 108 today. That's going to be very interesting out there at practice.
I'm torn about practicing in the heat as much as they do. They don't have two-a-days, so it's easier to recover from it. When you do two-a-days out in the heat like that, it really just starts draining your body.
Yeah.
They run out of IV bags. But there is a benefit sometimes to practicing inside just because you have crisper practices.
Yeah.
And even a lot of old-school football coaches have come through Houston and realize, like, all right, you know what? We gotta mix this up a little bit and be indoors because it's just a crisper practice.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's good to get tough and it's good to acclimatize yourself. And yet at the same time, I don't know. I question being out there outdoors all the time when it's a 108 index.
That old school coach you're talking about that has the revelation like that, that ain't D'Amico. D'Amico. I can't remember if he's, I don't know if he's had a practice indoors since he got here as a head coach.
Well, yeah, just that wasn't driven in there by the weather. I mean, if there's lightning, there's nothing you can do about it.
Even last week, there were two or whatever it was, like before they went to Canton, there were two that they easily could have stayed inside because the weather, like, no, we'll just practice out here in the rain.
Well, yeah, that I endorse, too, because that's, I think you got to take advantage of getting out in the elements, but there wasn't a lightning issue or anything
that's
like
true.
That. Yeah,
yeah,
it's good that they were practicing in the rain then because that seems to be so far, that's the one thing about CJ that I just don't know about yet because it's been a very small sample size, but you go back to the Jets game last year, a couple practices in the rain this year, and it just they were sloppy offensive performances. So we'll see. Small sample size.
Got to be some Ohio State footage of him playing in bad elements.
He had a really tough game against Northwestern, but that was extreme because of the wind.
Yeah,
the wind's the worst. The wind's wind and freezing rain. Those are the two that really seem to undo quarterbacks.
Yep. By the way, a couple texts. People saying Pedro León took his eye off the ball on that fly ball, and then when he had to look back up to find the ball, he lost it in the ceiling. So yeah, that's what happened there. They were saying on the broadcast, can't take your eye off the ball. You got to kind of feel for that fence instead of fearing it. Okay, so to me, Seth, the three most compelling position battles on this team right now, and I'm doing my mailbag episode for the Utopia podcast today, and I swear 80% of the questions I'm getting to the mailbag are, how does this guy look in this position group? You know, like people are really wondering. Because there's some very popular names that are in danger of getting cut from this football team right now. I'll start with wide receiver. And I think this is going to get interesting because they have so many guys. Like, what's the number they end up keeping? So I've got these positions kind of boiled down to locks, near locks, guys on the bubble, guys I think are out, etc. I'll try to make this as radio-friendly as possible. But wide receiver teams typically keep five, maybe six. The Texans have like nine guys right now who would make an average NFL team, I feel like, on this roster at wide receiver.
Yeah, there's it's tight. It's a crunch. It's, might yield some trades late in training camp, and we'll see about that, so that's nice. But I think John Metchie's the biggest one that's a sentimental favorite for a lot of very good reasons. And yet, you know, given the way he's played, I'll say just during training camp, there just hasn't been the consistency that you'd look for. There's elements there of Kiki QT where you can see that there's potential, but I just can't rely on you right now.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, he's a different type of athlete than Kiki QT, but when it comes to having solid, sure hands, Mechie's not a good enough athlete at this point to overcome not being really secure with the football. And that's just the big concern. He looks athletically a lot better. I got really excited about it the first couple weeks of training camp, but there's just too many drops, and then it just doesn't look fully integrated in the offense at times when they're in team situations. So a lot of these other guys are just further ahead in this offense right now.
Yeah, Diggs, Nico, and Tank are all locks to make the team. That's three. I'll put Noah Brown as a near lock, only because when Noah Brown's out there, you're like, all right, he's making this team. But the problem is, he's hurt again. He didn't practice on Sunday. He didn't play in the game. He's got a shoulder. Last year, he toughed his way through a bunch of injuries, but by the end of the year, he's just not available to you, and you can't have that, you know?
I think a lot of times we get hung up talking about the big three wide receivers and talk about spreading the ball around to those guys. And the fact of the matter is, really, those guys are going to get their touches and their targets, but on any given play, what those three guys really do is open things up for the guys who are in the right spot, like a Dalton Schultz, potentially a Cade Stover, and then a Noah Brown or a Robert Woods or whomever else. That's where I think the real benefit comes in, whether including when you've only got one of those big three healthy and available. Mm-hmm. There will be at least most likely there will be a few games this year where you only have a couple of those guys, maybe only one of them at times.
Yeah.
And that's the real value is to these other bubble guys that we're talking about.
Yep. So I think Brown probably makes a team. That's four. And then your bubble is fascinating. I mean, you got Xavier Hutchinson, who is a young player who's flashed at times. He's flashed in both of the preseason games so far, and I think that's the big thing when we're talking about John Mechie III. I think that's the big thing is that he's had issues in practice. He's not shown up in these two games. Not only not shown up, he's had two drops. You know, he's had a drop in each of the game. Hutchinson had five catches in the first game, and he had a nice 19-yard end around in this last game. They like to use him in that jet sweep type stuff. Robert Woods is a vet who's viewed as a leader, who, again, he had a good game in the Pittsburgh game. Skoranek is a really interesting piece because of what he brings on special teams, and he, too, has flashed in these preseason games. And then the wild card. So I've already rattled off. That's seven guys, even without John Mechie in the mix, you know? So you got Diggs, Collins, Dell, Brown, four, and then Hutchinson, Woods, Skoranek. That's seven. And then you got this wild card in Steven Sims, who we have no idea what the return game is going to look like for this team. He's their return specialist as of right now.
Yeah, and I don't even Johnny Johnson and Quintez. Wait, what's
Quintez Cephas.
I know you've got them listed as out. Yeah. Without breaking down every single play, which is impossible when watching practices and what have you, those guys do flash.
Yeah.
It's just I don't think it's as much of a near lock that Noah Brown makes a squad versus any of those other guys you mentioned, because there's so much upside on all of those other guys who are on the bubble or out or what have you.
Yeah, I have as Seth mentioned, I've got Johnny Johnson III and Quintez Cephas as out just based on who they're running with at this stage of camp.
Yeah.
But they both flash more than Mechie. I have Mechie on the bubble as opposed to out, just because all indications are if someone's going to get the benefit of the doubt, it's going to be John Mechie III.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But if I had to pick right now, I don't think he makes the team, Mechie. Running back. I think there's only one lock at the running back position, and that's Joe Mixon. That's it. After that, I've got Dari Gumbawale as a near lock just because he's run with the ones at times this year, and he brings that special teams element, too.
The special teams is why he's still in the league,
yeah.
Really. He's gotten I was looking at his stats yesterday. I don't know if he's ever had more than 30 carries in a season.
Mm-hmm.
It's been, you know, as a running back, I think they look at him as a guy that you can use him when you need him and you absolutely have to, and you can trust him for, you know, executing the offense and everything. But it's special teams where he really makes his hay. And that, I guess, there's a lot of good special teams players on the team right now. So I don't know if we can go by the old standards. I think this is a much deeper team.
Yeah.
So I don't look at him as much of a near special teams lock as maybe I would have in previous years.
The wild card that's popped up all of a sudden at running back is Cam Akers. When they signed Cam Akers and they brought him in on a minimum salary deal, I think you and I both felt like, all right, this is just sort of a lottery scratch off kind of thing. I mean, I know you were real curious about the two Achilles tears and just if we'd even see him early on when he got here practicing,
right?
You know,
yeah, he got, and then he was practicing less than 9 months after he'd torn his second Achilles tendon. It's a big wild card because after his first Achilles tendon, he came back and he played, but it wasn't the same level of electricity or juice that he had his rookie year, and he never really recaptured that. He looked better in Minnesota last year when the Rams finally, after a year of trying to trade him, traded him to the Vikings. But you see that athleticism. You see that potential to use him on third down. And so I think them trying to figure out exactly what role he would play, how much they can depend on his health, and where he fits on the roster, it's a complete wild card at this point.
Yeah.
I know those are the inner workings of the front office, and I don't know exactly how that shakes out.
Here, D'Amico Ryans was asked about Cam Akers on Sunday after Akers had another solid game against the Steelers. He was solid in the Hall of Fame game as well. Here was D'Amico Ryans on Cam.
From Cam, I've seen that a guy, first off, we know he's done it. I've gone against Cam a lot, and I've seen the plays that he's been able to make. So is he surprising me? No, he's not surprising me, but he seems like he's getting back into shape, getting back into football shape, and he's making plays that he's made prior in his career. It's exciting to see him, and just shows when guys maximize their opportunity. And I think he's a guy who's taking advantage of that, coming into camp late. But he's picked up on things very quickly. He's very sharp mentally, and that's allowed him to step in, I think, and really, you know, showcase his talents of what he's been able to do. And the biggest thing is him, right, making guys miss. And just, you know, when you're playing a running back position, you can make defenders miss. Like, Cam just has a savvy way of doing that, and that allows him to continue to press forward and gain yards for us.
That's where we are with Damian Pierce right now. If that last part when D'Amico is talking about, you know, turning a negative play into a positive,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be a 20-yard run, but you got to get positive yardage. Help the quarterback out. Let it be second and six instead of second and 10. And that's where I get into a bind with Damian Pierce, because I think when everything is good and right and there's a clear path, then Damian Pierce is still very valuable. But when you have imperfect blocking, he lacks the ability to make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
At least at this stage of his career. And I know people accuse me of overreacting to one preseason game. Some of the same stuff popped up in those four carries that got Damian Pierce benched last year. Like, I'm not looking at it as one preseason game. I'm looking at how he has a hard time integrating into this scheme, and those same issues popped up in the game last week. That's where you can't have those plays that, okay, the blocking's imperfect, but you could have gotten 3 yards out of it. And that's where we're struggling with Damian right now.
Was that cut you sent me yesterday that you texted me with your narration of it, was that from your YouTube page?
Yeah. I put a little breakdown of a couple of plays, because there was one play where the blocking was horrendous, and I wouldn't blame any running back for getting 0 yards on it.
Yeah.
There was another play where just Damian didn't make the read early enough in the down, and he had a clear lane on the cutback that he should have taken, and the blocking still wasn't perfect, but it was very clear that regardless of everything else on that play, he just didn't make the right read quickly enough. He took 4 steps to cut upfield instead of one cut and go.
It's what he was doing last year. So it's a really good breakdown. It's on Seth's YouTube page. Go find that. Go out of your way to go find it. It's really good. I definitely want to get your thoughts on defensive tackle, because this was kind of a maligned position for the offseason, because the Texans let a couple guys go. They brought in some journeyman guys, and it's been a really competitive group. I've got the locks as Fatakasi, Mario Edwards. I have Settle as a lock also, just because it feels like he's a vet that D'Amico really likes, but maybe I'm being a little bullish on him. And then the bubble guys I have are Khalil Davis, Kurt Heinisch, Marcus Harris, and this Agim, McTelvin Agim, who Casario mentioned on our show back in May, you know. And then they brought Fildarius Payne back in as well yesterday.
I wonder about Tim Settle. He's a big body, and I think they just wanted to add some mass in the offseason, and they did that also with Fatakasi. Those are the two real big guys they brought in. I think that you can expect more consistency out of Khalil Davis and Kurt Heinisch, But I don't know exactly. But Tim Settle has a little bit of wiggle to him and some, I would say, upside, but he's an established veteran at this point in his career. I think he's a little bit more on the bubble.
Yeah.
Than depending on how they feel about the younger guys. Harris, I'll be surprised if he doesn't make the team, just because I don't know if he's ready to be depended on game day, but the upside is very much there.
Yeah.
He's an undersized guy, so he's got to work through some things. Just like a young Ed Oliver did, where he's undersized but thick and explosive. He's got to learn to overcome some of the size issues, but he looks like a scouting report so far in a good way. There's an ability to get across the line really quickly and to be a pain in the butt in the backfield that I think they're probably excited about. So I think Marcus Harris makes the team.
I want to get this one in real quick because it looks like you've got a thought on it. But do you think they carry three quarterbacks?
Oh yeah, okay. We don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. You've got all these issues on special teams, and it's easier to carry a quarterback these days, but I don't know if this was when they would cut the ties on Case Keenum, if they feel that good about Davis Mills and his two promising, encouraging performances in the last two preseason games. But this is still, we're less than a year removed from when Case Keenum was supposedly the backup, Davis Mills was supposedly the backup. They chose to go with Case Keenum instead.
They've got some new rule where you can carry a quarterback on the practice squad and you have unlimited call-ups to use him as the emergency quarterback. I just don't know that, like, I'm not so sure that if you try to get Case Keenum on your practice squad that somebody wouldn't pick him up to be their backup, you know?
Right, exactly, especially because he has knowledge of the system.
Yeah.
Somebody gets injured or what have you, you might get in a bidding war with somebody. Now, they might want to roll those dice and say, all right, well, we'll park him on the practice squad. If another team, hey, Case, we know you like it here.
Yeah.
If somebody comes with an offer, just give us a crack at it first.
Yeah.
Because just so for those of you who don't know, when you're on the practice squad, you're basically a free agent.
Right.
Other teams can come and just sign you, and you can, it's
do you get a right of first, do you get the right to retain that guy, though, on the practice squad? I didn't know that.
There's something, not typically, but I know there's, I don't want to, we'd have to defer to Texans Cap on this.
Yeah. Maybe he's listening. QB will be interesting for sure. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Headlines. Good night again for the Astros last night. They continue to be road warriors, man. We've got some NFL news as well, some interesting injury news, and then one of the more fascinating holdouts that we've seen in a while as well because of what's going on with it. These are all future Texans opponents that this stuff is happening with. So we'll get into all that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Getting inside the dome, but that's not going to change Alex's mind.
Alex Bregman goes deep to left field and gone. He continues his incredible tear. Bregman hits number 18 on the year, and the Astros jump in front 1-0.
That's a heck of a way to celebrate winning player of the week, is getting off to an electric start by hitting a bomb here in Tampa Bay. Braggy bomb on the board.
Yeah, first inning, Braggy bomb on the board. We'll get to that in just a second. Hey, quick reminder. It's our first Texans home game on Saturday, preseason against the Giants. Texans Ticket Tuesday today, man. 7 o'clock hour. Yeah, we're giving away front row bullpen seats to Saturday afternoon's game with the New York Giants in the 7 o'clock hour, the noon hour, and the 5 p.m. hour today. So be listening throughout the next hour for that, for your cue to call and win tickets to see the Texans play. Breggy Bomb gets it started. Yiner Bum kind of finishes the job. 6-1, the final score for the Astros last night. The bats are heating up, especially at the top of the lineup. And Joe Espada, Astros manager, said, he reminded us, hey, man, bats are getting hot. It's a 162-game season.
162, right? It's a long season. And these players know how to run that marathon. They're trained to run marathons, and they're really good at it. And they all lean on each other. They all believe in one another, and we all, know how to, turn the page together and pick each other up. And credit to a group of players that they just know how to win.
You know, when you talk about the 162 games with baseball players, it's so much about keeping an even keel. And Bregman has always been that guy that's able to keep an even keel. Yeah. It's almost like his 24 hours a day, he almost looks unflappable. There was a play he made a really nice throw on the run to first base for an out yesterday that almost, because he's so calm, cool, and collected about it, ends up looking less impressive than it actually was, because he just He loaded up and used, got his legs into the throw. He didn't have to be all arm or anything like that. And it's that ability to sustain himself through long, long slumps at times that's so frustrating. But then when you see the upside of it, it's the best thing in the world. I think he's gone through various stretches in his career where I think a lot of players would have fallen apart mentally. I just wish it translated into more consistent. It's so weird that he's so mentally calm and stable, and yet the play tends to be wildly erratic in terms of his super long slumps.
Yeah.
And we just need to be able to sustain this through, I don't know, October or so.
I know.
Can I just ask for a couple of months of this?
I know the exact play you're talking about because he made two plays that inning. And that's the part where I start to peek ahead a little bit. That's the part of Bregman, I think, if he's not here next year, I think we miss that more than we miss the bat. He's just such an automatic over there.
Well, there's an element to leadership sometimes where it's always a team effort, right? You can't ever just have one veteran that tells everybody how it's going to be. But I think that having a guy who's the consummate professional in terms of steadiness of mind, like the guy that can kind of keep his head when everybody else is going crazy or stressing out, his ability to sit and help Hunter Brown on a team flight, mm-hmm. Decide to start pitching his sinker, like all that stuff, it's hard to put a number on it.
It's hard to quantify, man. Yeah.
And the Astros understand that. They've been good about, like, from the very beginning, Jeff Luhnow, his one quote from the Astros ball was, just because you can't count it doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah.
You can't fall into this trap of thinking that the math can figure everything out. But but I think the math is obviously going to override the uncountables maybe with Bregman.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what the rest of the league thinks of Alex Bregman. Let's enjoy this for now, though. He was great again last night. He and Yordan, co-players of the week. Justin Verlander getting another rehab start later this week, so that's good news. Luis Garcia is still not throwing. The clock is ticking on him right now. Kyle Tucker did some things before the game last night out in the outfield. He caught some fly balls, did some crow hop throws, I think is what Chandler Rome described them as.
Yeah.
A few other things. He jogged a little bit out there. There was video that surfaced on Brian McTaggart's Twitter account last night. Kyle Tucker did not look ready to play in a Major League Baseball game. I'll just put it that way.
I was trying to look at it. I watched these a few times and, trying not to be overly critical because it was obviously half speed and just kind of warming up, perhaps. But it looked like he had a hitch,
Yeah.
He had a hitch in his giddy up. So I don't think he's ready to just storm the field next week.
No.
I'd be really surprised. I think he's still got some work to do.
Yep.
But I also, I'm not trying to be alarmed by it. It just didn't look like anybody where you wouldn't watch that and think like, oh, look, he's moving easy. He's no big deal.
Well, so all we had to go by before this video was just the tea leaves we've been getting for the last several weeks. And for a while, the tea leaves looked like it's going to be September at least before he's back. And then for the last few days, all of a sudden, it's been a little more flowery. And as you've pointed out, it's hard to believe anything the Astros say these days when it comes to injuries. Just watching that video, I go, okay, this still feels like, that looks like September to me, Especially if you consider he's going to have to go to rehab, a few rehab games for a week or two or whatever it is.
Brandy texted me this morning that Kyle Tucker took fly balls yesterday, yeah. But she typed it out wrong and it said flies balls. And I said, yeah, that's about an accurate. It looked like he had flies balls.
He did.
It was. It looked like he hasn't grown his full pre-injury testicles back yet.
Yeah,
yes.
They haven't dropped yet. Texans back at practice today. We'll talk more about them at the top of the hour. Around the NFL, just a few news items. Jahmyr Gibbs, running back for the Lions, has some sort of leg injury, a hamstring. They're not real clear on what it is, but he left practice yesterday. That's more for you fantasy owners out there who are drafting pretty soon. Just beware. This Hassan Reddick story to me is hysterical. With the Jets. The Jets traded for Hassan Reddick, traded a third-round pick, I think a conditional one, a third that could turn into a second, something like that, to the
Eagles.
Knowing
that he wanted a new contract.
Right, right. Yeah. And said, no, we'll still make the trade. And we've seen teams do that before. The Texans did it with Laremy Tunsil. They wind up agreeing, Texans wound up agreeing to a deal. Jalen Ramsey, that happened with the Rams. They got a deal done. This Hassan Reddick thing, though. Hassan Reddick yesterday, he's not been in Jets camp. He's accruing fines that are getting way up there. And they can't pardon those fines. He has requested a trade from the Jets before he's even put on a Jets uniform yet. So,
oh, man. He's requested a trade because he wanted a new contract, and now is still requesting a trade because he wanted a new contract.
Right.
That's I'm sorry, Jets. I'm sorry for your loss or your potential loss. The big news that everybody's really getting antsy for is what's Rashee Rice's suspension going to be, the wide receiver for the Chiefs, who had a couple off-field incidents in the offseason.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm eagerly anticipating.
Yeah. Justin Simmons visited the Falcons yesterday as well. For you Texan fans, keeping an eye on the former Broncos safety.
And you know, we haven't. I'm going to watch this afternoon. Anthony Richardson apparently looked atrocious in his play this weekend. I have not watched it yet. I'm very excited to.
I have.
Yeah. Have you?
Yes.
Is as bad as it's as
it's
I've read.
Bad. It's pretty bad.
I mean, it's preseason. It's his first game back from injury, yada, yada, yada.
You know the internet provides an inflation element to it, to where it's probably, it looks 30% worse on the internet.
It's the first time hearing of this.
Yeah. Hey, our baseball...
It's not calm, cool, and collected?
No, but he did. Yeah, no, there's plenty of food in there, though, for you if you're looking to eat some bad Anthony Richardson snaps, for sure. Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Okay, for the last few years, Yordan Alvarez, a Yordan Alvarez at-bat has been the one thing in Houston sports you have to stop and watch. I think there's a new one this fall. And it's Texan related. And I will tell you what it is coming up next.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.